Welcome back to the Further North podcast, everybody. Massive, massive episode today. Two huge talking points, which is very exciting. We've got Mitch from Zero Hanger, an unbiased North Melbourne opinion on our club, our past, present and future is coming up. And a massive, massive win in a prelim final. 1 point over Adelaide for the AFLW girls. We're off to a grand final. Never thought I'd say those words about North Melbourne in any capacity. So I wasn't there for the 90s guys and us kids who only really started following sort of 2000 and after. We haven't seen that sort of stuff. So, hey, here we are. Get your tickets. It's exciting stuff. But look, what we're going to do today, I've got the interview with Mitch. Hopefully you guys have heard of Zero Hanger or consumed some of their stuff before. We've basically just got an unbiased look at our club. I'm going to drop that interview in here now. And then after the interview, we can chat about the AFLW game to finish it off. So, look, let's not waste any time. Let's jump straight over to the interview with Mitch from Zero Hanger. All right, so we've got Mitch from Zero Hanger here, massive guest. We've decided to branch out from North Melbourne fans for the first time in this podcast life, and I'm going for an unbiased North Melbourne opinion. So let's see what the other fans of other clubs think about us. Maybe not quite as much praise as we're going to give them, but welcome, Mitch from Zero Hanger.
Thanks, Josh. No, pleasure to be on. Obviously, a pleasure to be the first unbiased Roos fan on the pod as well. I'll see if I can be a bit of a straight shooter. But no, it should be fine. Looking forward to kind of dissecting the Roos and you know what they've been up to and where they're heading.
It'll be really interesting to sort of see what my perception is maybe compared to yourself. And I kind of think I'm a fairly level-headed sports fan in general and think I have pretty realistic expectations, but I'm also ready for you to blow those out of the water and just tell me that I'm an absolute nut job. So I guess we'll see how we go. But the first question, you're involved with Zero Hanger, the independent sort of AFL journalism sort of space. Let us know a little bit about that and tell us about the publication.
Yeah, so Zero Hanger is part of like a Zero Digital umbrella. So yeah, independent. And we kind of have a couple of main sites, so Zero Hanger, which is AFL, and Zero Tackle, which is rugby league. So those that kind of like that crossover, that you kind of get best of both from those. And Tackle's actually a bit older, and it's a fair bit bigger than Hanger. You know, we have a decent social following on both, but you know, a lot of people might only know one over the other. But yeah, Tackle, our rugby league site's probably been around for about 11 years, I think.
Okay, cool.
Hanger opened up in about 2015. So I guess the story was kind of that it was just a guy who had a spreadsheet for rugby league transfer moves, and he just just made it for his mates. And then eventually kind of made it accessible for everyone on a site. So it was literally just a planted spreadsheet on a website a decade ago. And then eventually it just got some traction and you know, looked at it as a way to kind of maybe make some money through advertising and, you know, just online and being a bit more present. So that worked out well. And then branched out into maybe more of a news space, you know, opinions, you know, fans could kind of write their articles. And then eventually I think there's a bit of a partnership and decided to make an AFL site, hence Zero Hanger, spelled with an E. A lot of people kind of like assume it's a Essendon page sometimes.
I didn't notice that until you just said it. I'm like, oh yeah.
Yes, we get that a little bit for people that like kind of know who we are but don't really. They're like, isn't that like an Essendon site? I'm like, no. So at least we're being heard of, but like we have a lot of like you know, rusted on fans, which is always really good. We've had some great growth over the last few years, which has been really exciting to see. You know, as a journalist, you kind of get mixed feedback.
Absolutely. And the internet does that, doesn't it?
And certainly from points from North Melbourne fans among all clubs.
We're a passionate bunch.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they're the best kind of fans, I guess, because they're kind of just, you know, that's what you want. You don't just want everyone kind of agreeing to the same thing, I think.
That's true. So, I guess we've seen some things the last few years, mate. We need to vent some frustration somewhere. Yeah, and unfortunately, you might have copped to the end of a bit of that. Yeah,
that's certainly a part of it as well, kind of just being that space for people to kind of air their grievances as well. So you know, we're always kind of welcome to that. Like we're a very small team as well. You know, it's a couple of writers. You know, we were able to give you know, some uni students some, like, you know, credit as well, which is always great for their experience.
Oh, beautiful.
And just about everyone that's come through our internship program has been an editor. Like I came through the internship program, and a lot of other of our writers, current and past, did the same. So we do like to hire from within when we can, which is something we also pride ourselves on. But yeah, we're a small team, independent, as you mentioned, which is always quite fun. We're based in Melbourne, and we're just seeing great growth, which has been very fun for us. And obviously, we all just love our job, being able to cover the media. We've got accredited journalists, so you know, we can go attend games and press conferences and some fun events. Beautiful. Like we were at the draft last week, which is really good. So it's been a fun few years since I've kind of joined.
Yeah, beautiful. What do you think? What do you think the advantage of being sort of independent is, maybe over someone that's more under the thumb, for lack of a better word?
We probably don't run into too many things where, like, you know, we're not having to check over this and that, and we don't have as much, I guess through our editing process, it's probably not as much, hey, should we be, you know, pulling this? Should we be thinking about this? Like we're very, thorough and doing our due diligence, but we probably don't have, you know, lawyers editing our work like maybe some publications would. There's no agenda. You know, we're not pushing anything in particular. We've got, a number of, very diverse writers. Like we kind of just play to our strengths, we kind of get to work alongside each other as much as well. That's certainly one thing. Like we're not kind of having someone tap us on the shoulder and say, hey, can we, change this because of X and Y. And we kind of just like to be pretty free and kind of do what we want to do, which is always good. Like I think we've kind of, changed a lot whenever we've had kind of, some new people coming through the door, but it's always for the best. Like it's always been, really fun to just kind of welcome new writers in and just let them loose, which is something that we get to do that we understand not a lot of others would. We kind of just do what we can with the team that we've got and the resources that we've got, because that's the other thing, being an independent, being so reliant on what you can do instead of some outside help is obviously on the flip side. So, we have hard workers here, which is, something that we're very proud of as well. So, it's different. I know a few people who work at a few other publications and some of the big ones, and it's all quite fun. I think everyone just likes doing what they're doing. And obviously we haven't had any run-ins where it's been an issue for us, just given that independent kind of tag that we've got.
Yeah, cool. No beef or territory taking over anything from any other media space. I think it's good. I think these days, especially maybe the last 10 years or so with media, I think a lot more people now maybe trust independence a little bit more, because we have learned maybe sometimes there can be a tap on the shoulder from bigger corporation-owned publications, and you don't always know if you're getting the most unbiased, sort of opinion or creating a bit of a narrative. And I think, I know personally for me, and I know a lot of people think the same way with that, if it's a reputable independent like yourselves, I think I would much rather read an article of a business or a company like that, knowing that I'm not going to get some sort of swayed agenda or something like that. So I think that's really good. And I guess that is another reason why I wanted to get you on as well, because I don't know, a neutral's view, but someone that I've read for a little bit and sort of trust as well. And hopefully, I'm assuming most people who listen to this and in the football world sort of know or have heard of Zero Hanger. So hopefully we can dissect a little bit more, but no, good on you for being independent. I think that's good, and definitely more trustworthy source. But hey, we're here for North Melbourne chat, so we might as well get into that now before we bore all the other listeners. So we're basically just going to dive in to see what you think about maybe our past, our present, our future, our draft, and things like that. The first question I've got here is, as a neutral, where have you seen North Melbourne being in the last few seasons? What's the perception that you've had of North Melbourne as a club, say, the last 5 years?
We're dating back. Yeah, last five. I always try and figure out this window of North Melbourne from Brad Scott's probably best years, which is, a decade ago, prelim football with the list that I've always thought he did so well to get to a top four finish.
Absolutely.
Then obviously I think since, Brad's departure and Reece Shaw, David Noble, and now Alistair Clarkson, couldn't have been an easy ride. And I think we've kind of seen the results of what happens at clubs when there's a lot of off field change. whether it's forced or not, which we saw with a number of those kind of situations. And you know, some things, it comes down to just being unfortunate in you know, how certain moves unfold, and others, it's a learning curve. For the Roos the last few years, I don't have to tell the listeners or yourself how difficult it has been. But just from a neutral's point of view, like I'm pretty, you know, glass half full kind of guy. So I know that there's promise now, but yeah, the last few years certainly would have been, I guess probably the lowest, like you're probably, if I'm taking the last 5 years as a span, like it's probably the hardest of any club. You know, Gold Coast have been in that group as well for, you know, since their inception, but North are probably the one that's hung around in that, you know, bottom few sides for the biggest period, and probably just haven't seen that growth. And then whether that comes down to development or key personnel or just recruiting, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into it. You can't usually pinpoint one, but you know, I think we're going to start seeing what all it's kind of built toward, and there's been setbacks, but what we're going to start seeing is what I think Roos fans are going to want to start seeing, and that's a bit more growth, you know, getting the best out of some young guys and hopefully turning into a, you know, a club players want to come to. Like, you know, recruitment hasn't been short by any means, but it's more, you know, landing the big fish and retaining the, you know, the key players that maybe you guys might have had to bid farewell to over the past few years. So it's a really important, obviously, period at the moment for North Melbourne. And you know, like I kind of mentioned earlier, some stuff can be forced and some stuff is unprecedented. And I think a lot of what North Melbourne went through this year and what Alistair Clarkson had to go through this year was, some of that was unprecedented. But at the same time, you know, I think there's a few areas that the club would like to start seeing turn around. Maybe it's in, you know, development and getting the most out of, you know, top draft talent. Obviously unfortunate to be going through a rebuild through, you know, the introduction of COVID and then, you know, having top access to a draft or a few drafts that were somewhat hampered. Then again, I think you look at 2021's draft, a lot of those kids are flourishing despite missing like a bottom age campaign. So you can't all blame it on just COVID and development. And then on top of that, you know, there's, probably a few things looking forward and, you know, what's going to be different about next year to compared to 2023 and 2022 and some of these hard years. So kind of sum it up. I'd probably have North Melbourne as probably the 18th ranked club over the past, you know, that 5 year span that you mentioned.
Yeah. I think that's pretty fair. I think I have a lot of conversations at the barbershop every day about football, and people do really feel like, and I guess it is because North is the smallest club sort of in Vic. I really do think people feel like it's been a lot worse for a lot longer, a lot of the time. And I know that sort of perpetuates a lot of the articles that will come out or chats about North on the TV and everything will be very, very negative. And I don't think a lot of people maybe see the little wins that we are having. You know, I think the David Noble year was just the rock bottom year for us. I mean, there was nothing inspiring about that year at all. And it sort of has slowly trended upwards sort of since then, but it has been a very, very slow progression. I think one of the things, and I'll get your opinion on this as well. One of the things I feel like has hampered us a lot is the draft. And we have had, which is a crazy statement to make because we have had a lot of very, very high picks. But I think the point, and it's definitely not the only reason why we've been bad. We've mismanaged things. I think drafting, I think we've had a lot of success with lower draft picks. There's like Larkies and Zerhas and Eddie Fords have come on fairly well and they've been lower picks. Maybe our slightly higher picks, the talent development hasn't really been there. But I don't know if I've ever seen a run where we had our first year being really bad was 2020. I think 2018, I think we were 10th, 2019, 12th. COVID hit and we sort of hit the bottom. And then the years we've had high picks, we haven't really been able to draft the players that maybe have been on our radars first up. I remember us really wanting Jamara Ugo-Hagan in the first year we were bad. And I think he was academy or father, son, one of those to the Bulldogs. Next year getting the number one pick, not being able to get Dacos, drafting a Horn Francis and that causing so many problems. The year after that, missing out on Ashcroft with the number one pick as well. Very happy with who we got, by the way, not complaining at all, but having that, and then imagine a Jed Walter next to a Nick Larkey up in the forward line. And look, not that we didn't get any good players from there, but I think how I'm really, really realizing in the last few years how structured the draft can be, or, you know, why all these father-son picks and all these academy picks and how compromised it really can be. I think the pick, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think if the pick that we got from the AFL for our assistance package this year didn't get picked till 29 or something like that. So that's a massive reason why I think we haven't been able to fill key positions that we need. We've done fairly well from the draft as well, but, you know, do you think that's a valid reason as to why maybe we haven't been able to prosper quite as much? I'm not saying we would have been great or been in the finals by now, but, you know, it has hampered us a little bit.
Yeah, no, certainly doesn't help. I remember, I think I covered a piece midway through last year, and this is obviously before the Horn Francis situation, and all of a sudden you've moved from, you know, pick one and a pick one player to, you know, getting in guys like Wardlaw and Sheasel, and it kind of changed the whole situation. But there was a real focus on probably you guys needing to look at forwards. You know, Aaron Cameron went number one last year. Maybe if it wasn't for Horn Francis requesting that trade, you probably would have taken Aaron Cameron. And then, as you mentioned, years prior, Jamari Ugle-Hagan as an NGA prospect for the Bulldogs doesn't allow you access to him. Obviously, the Crows had pick one in that draft, so whether they would have stayed with Riley Filthorpe, who was a local product and certainly would have been in consideration, but, you know, they might have got Jamara and that might have led you guys to getting Filthorpe instead. So still, it's a key position need that I thought that at that point midway through last year was going to be important for you guys to consider with your first pick, especially when you take in the fact that you had, I think it's Simkin, Davies Uniac, Thomas, Phillips and Powell in the same draft.
Yeah.
And then it was Horn Francis. It was just pure mids with top picks. And it can be a balancing act of going for best available and list needs. And, you know, while you guys would have had Will Phillips ahead of Logan McDonald, I hate to bring this up, I'm sorry, but, you know, maybe that could have been.
We believe in Will Phil.
That was the Ugle-Hagan Filthorpe drop as well. Yeah. So he was kind of between those four at pick three. And I think it was Nick Larkey speaking last week, kind of said he was kind of happy to see key position players getting drafted in the first round. Although I don't think he was happy no one more forwards. you guys got him, Will Dawson and Taylor Goad, who, you know, certainly serve as, you know, defensive and ruck stocks. And Zane Dersman's going to be a great talent who's maybe more of that third tall forward. But, yeah, I just think that, you know, when you're not a, you know, a big landing spot for big fish players and, you know, big free agents, that I think, you know, and drafting is obviously going to be your main point of recruitment. But sometimes, you know, biting the bullet and taking gambles on maybe key position talent is going to be key. Like I said, yeah, you would have loved Jed Walter this year. The academy conversation is another one entirely. You know, do those kids even have a draft chance if it's not for the Suns? And how do you kind of get that balance of making sure that football's growing outside of Victoria, but at the same time, you know, making sure it's an even contest and conversation? Like, you know, the Suns don't have father-son picks, or they won't have father-son picks for another, you know, 10 years at least. So there's something like that, whereas obviously the Roos have had some good father-son recruits come through the door. You know, you've got your Archers and your Harveys through at the moment. Luke McDonald's a co-captain, so there's always going to be a few. I guess there is also that balance of the Nick Blakey conversation when you've got an academy versus father-son.
Well, Bailey Scott was in a similar situation as well. Luckily, he sort of went with us in the end, but, yeah, you know, he could have gone to Geelong as well, yeah.
He was a Gold Coast Academy kid as well, so got one back there in a way.
About time.
So, through the draft, for a club like North Melbourne over the last 5 years, it's been so important to get those picks right. You know, your 2022 draft haul, you guys would be absolutely wrapped with Harry Sheasel being the player he was. You know, the best small forward that's probably come through the draft in some time to turn into a lethal halfback / midfielder is a stroke of brilliance. Just trying to get that, you know, Nick Daicos clone, I guess. And that's kind of, you know, what Clarko had him doing preseason last year, was just looking at tapes of Nick Daicos' first year. So that's paid off fantastically well. You could argue he had a better first season than Daicos did.
Big call there. I like that.
I said, could argue. I think the numbers stacked up in Sheasel's favour, but then
you've got to look at
playing in a prelim and then Harry kind of, you know, playing for a bottom two club, which again has its pros and cons of finding the ball easier when you're in a better side, but then, you know, also getting it from teammates is a lot harder as well in a bottom club, but then bottom club you have a lot more reliance, whereas Daicos is surrounded by stars. So there's, you know, it's arguments within arguments, but you know, you guys, yeah, we'd be wrapped with your first couple of, with your first two picks from last year. I think your two kids in Colby and Zane are some good list needs. Like Colby just gives you a bit more run through midfield, and that might give someone like Sheasel, you know, some versatility to play, you know, a bit more halfback if they, you know, still want him to the midfield here and there, or he could, you know, go back to his traditional role as a small forward. You know, George Wardlaw might just need a bit more time developing, you know, great signs obviously in 2023, but, you know, hamstring issues, you kind of just want to be a bit more conservative. So Colby's going to be, you know, pretty ready made. I think he'll be, you know, a good chance for round one. Whether he's needed at round one or not is another question. You guys get Dylan Stevens and Zach Fisher in, who get some nice run on the outside. So yeah, 5 first round picks is obviously a big tick in trying to, you know, bolster, you know, that group that's coming through and making sure that, you know, the bottom 6 in your best 23 or 22 is,
yeah,
you know, at a standard above most clubs, because that's really the area that can be a difference, particularly with, you know, bottom 10 sides trying to push their way up. But yes, the draft hasn't been easy drafting, as we kind of circle back to with, you know, the players that you'd have at the top of the order and how the draft probably unfolds with academy or father son tied prospects. So the midfield streak probably should be coming to an end next year. The only issue is for North Melbourne, I think
it's meant to be pretty midfield heavy, isn't it?
Top 10 I probably have as midfielders. The one that is a key forward and is Adelaide's in Tyler Lockes.
Beautiful.
But, you know, so infrequent that you get, you know, the top 10 at this point of the year looking anything like the top 10.
Yeah, for sure.
In a month's time, like Ashton Moyer and Harry Lemmy last 2 years were top 5 picks in their bottom age and ended up going a bit later and both by Carlton, but it can just change dramatically. Aaron Cadman wasn't really top 10, top 15 conversation in heading into his draft year and went pick 1. So there's a lot that can change, and hopefully it just does open the door for some key position talent. But hopefully at the same time, North Melbourne aren't ones at the top of the draft order. And that's the thing.
I was about to say, maybe we just finish 10th or something or 8th maybe, and then we don't have to worry about the top 10 in the draft. But look, I think if that's Clarko's master plan, I'm all here for it, but I don't know how much I believe. With sort of now and how we see the club now, before we sort of go into the future, how do you feel about the Dylan Stevens and Zach Fisher pickups? Because personally, in my opinion, I don't think North, with where they're at currently, could have got a better sort of player than Zach Fisher. I don't know heaps about Dylan Stevens. I did talk to the True Bloods podcast guys over Messenger a little bit, and they gave me a little bit of info about him. I think he's got a high ceiling, but still needs to prove a little bit more, which the opportunities will come at North. But a player like a Zach Fisher, I think, is arguably the best sort of player we could have got from where we're at as a club. What do you think of those two signings from where we're at right now, and what do you think they can bring us?
Yeah, both high upside. Dylan Stevens is, you know, former top 5, top 6 pick. Probably just doesn't get that same look or afforded chance that he did at Sydney. Not to say he didn't get chances, but when you've got Errol Gould and Braden Campbell's probably one the Swans rate quite highly as their wing options, plus a few others that can kind of offer some run out wide. Sydney would have loved to have kept him. There's certainly no doubt about that, but, you know, he kind of gets a new opportunity and certainly some security in his role, slots straight onto a wing, you know, opposite of Bailey Scott, who I think had such an underrated year this year. So that kind of gives you some really nice complementing wingman for what is a pretty stacked midfield group. You know, LDU, if he can somehow find a new gear in 2024, that's going to be quite a scary prospect. Jai Simkin, I think we know what we're going to get from him. I'm not sure how much further he'll take a new step up. He's got plenty of football left ahead of him, and it'd be really great to see if he can.
It's interesting with Jai, really quickly, sorry to jump in, but like he had a pretty down year last year, even stats-wise, but effectiveness sort of in the game. I'm really interested to see what happens with Jai next year, because I don't know if he's in our top even 4 or 5 maybe that would be in our starting 3 in the midfield. So it'll be really interesting to see if he can reinvent himself as a wing or a half forward or something like that, because, you know, you got Colby, LDU, Taron Thomas, all these guys, Wardlaw, Sheasel rotates through there. I'd like to see more Zerha minutes in the middle. I think there's a lot of players that I think might be over the top of him. So it's a massive year for Jai.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, is he one that I think you mentioned on the wing, does he get pushed out? You know, Colby probably starts on a wing as well. So you've kind of got four wingmen right there, but at the same time, Taron Thomas is going to be the watch. We spoke earlier in the show about unprecedented and just kind of what he had going on. Like I was surprised he played AFL football at all this year. I probably didn't want to see him playing AFL football. I think a lot of fans probably agreed. North fans probably, you know, split as well. But the football he played, if you're speaking strictly on field and the football that he is,
it was a phenomenal last half of the year.
Yeah, honestly ridiculous, and just kind of shows how high value he is. And he's just going to be a big watch next year just to see if he can play a full year of football, you know, nothing off field kind of happening. And then at the same time, a big contract call to make. You know, he's never been short of interest. You know, just how much is he looking to repay the Roos for kind of, you know, not really cutting him off.
Sticking by him and supporting him.
That's another part of the discussion is, you know, the club's decision to have him stay in a football environment and kind of have people around him. You know, you've probably seen before a few clubs might have just said, you're gone, and you know, they kind of fall out of the system, and then there's not that support network. So it's a really tough area, obviously, with some of the stuff that's going on in Taron's life, but you know, the club stuck by him, and hopefully everything works out in the future. But he's a big watch. Going back to kind of Stevens and Fisher, like you mentioned, I think both trades North did quite well to kind of and what they received on top of like what they gave up. So from a you know, negotiations point of view, would have been happy with those. Got the business done fairly early. As well, Fisher looks to be a halfback. Should offer some run. You know, you guys kind of lose Aaron Hall. And you've kind of cut off some loose parts as well. And if he's going to be a starting, you know, back flanker, he certainly can be a good ball winner, smart user, a high accumulator. So he's going to be an interesting one to see how well he fits. And, you know, if that progression that what we saw from a few games in Carlton's back third is if that's similar trajectory, then he's going to be a great pickup for sure. I guess it's, you know, compliment those two guys complementing the midfield on top of your draft pickups is a really exciting prospect for the Roos. And hopefully some ready-made talent is certainly what you need, just as much as you need draft coming in.
No, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see with Fisher as well, because I could see, you know, we have got a guy like a Josh Goeder, a Miller Bergman as well, who I rate Miller Bergman pretty highly. Josh Goeder, I think, has a high ceiling, but he probably needs to show a bit more consistency for me, but those are guys off halfback I also like. It'll be interesting to see if Schiesel is sort of pushed up the ground to the midfield or be another dynamic sort of forward that we might be missing up there. But then the other sort of thing that we maybe have at the moment is a lot of those medium-sized forwards with Stevenson and Paul Curtis, Eddie Ford, Curtis Taylor, Cooper Harvey, Zerha and Dersma, I guess, not quite being key position sort of height and size. So it'd be really interesting to see what that dynamic is, because then does Schiesel go into the middle, but then someone like a Jai Simkin might suffer from that. You know, it's so interesting to see the dynamic, but this is the first time for years that I'm seeing, you know, not just like a best 22 and then the next guys in are sort of pretty rubbish or not quite up to the standard. And that is good. It's going to push some of our favorite players out, but that's really what we need, because we need the depth there. What do you think of the other guys? So like Toby Pink, do you know much about him, or Biggie Newen? There's some of those other guys we picked up. I think they're, you know, I don't know how, if I would put them in the round one team, having sort of one AFL game combined between them. Callum Dawson, depending on how much you know about Callum Dawson, you might get another shot as well down in the back line. It's a pretty rogue back line of we've got players, but not solid or reliable players.
Yeah, round one's going to be interesting. Come selection with that back third, you know, no Griffin Logue, and no Ben Mackay. Dawson, you probably think gets a start.
Aiden Cole will be there, as much as I don't know how much about my opinion on Aiden Cole, but he's Aiden Cole and Tristan Jerry are my two players that I can't really get behind and I don't rate, and I get roasted constantly for those opinions on the podcast.
But it's going to be an interesting year for you there, because I think we'll definitely see results on, you know, Aiden Cole's at an age where we should know exactly what we're getting from him. And he's probably not a certified best 22 player. He's an AFL player, but he's whether it's the best 22, he's really going to have to take that step that we haven't seen yet. Like I said, we probably know his ceiling already. And without Griffin Logue, he could get a little bit exposed. Callum Dawson, he's still young. He's got a big decent body on him. Toby Pink is, he's a player you're bringing in. If you've got, plans for him as early as next year, Sandford Team of the Year player at fullback, had a good season for Glenelg and could probably be the one that is that kind of gap filler while Logue's out, and it's kind of just throw him into the deep end and just see what he can do. Big and Ewan, I'm not really sure he gets a look early into next year unless he has just a wild preseason. So the spine all up is going to be very interesting. Tristan Cherry, I think rucks are so interesting. Like, you can really just pick them up from nowhere and they could be superstars. Like, you just have to look at Kieran Briggs this year. Sometimes there's just any ruckman can really, once they kind of get the reins in midfield and a bit more freedom, could really be anything. I think Cherry's a solid ruckman to have. They're not that easy to come around, and we see how much clubs are chopping and changing their ruckman each off-season now. And I think having someone like Cherry locked in is a formidable option. I think he's still got a lot to give. And without being able to break the bank and go get one because there aren't a lot available. I think he's certainly a sturdy one to have. And then you've got Cal Coleman Jones and Charlie Compton. Two guys who I know Brewers fans would have liked to have seen a lot more of. Whether it's through injury or form, in both cases.
Yeah.
But from both a ruck perspective and a kind of supporting Nick Larkey perspective as well. It's two areas that the club's probably lacked a little bit. Goldie's obviously been a great service to the club, but you've always had to need to have planned further for life after Todd Goldstein, and we're there now. And Cherry's going to be that man, but you guys probably want that second ruck.
Yeah, I'm a bit terrified with Jerry as the ruckman. I just haven't seen it from him, but I do hope he takes a step. But I don't know. I'm not too confident on Jerry. I'd love to see a Biggie New in the ruck. I think just athletic. I don't think you've got to be the best ruckman anymore personally in the game. I think if you can compete and sort of tap the ball roughly to where your players are, if you can compete on the ground, I think that's a much more valuable skill. Charlie Comben's an interesting one because there's strong talk that he's going to go back next year, like a Robbie Tarrant or, to go to fullback so his body holds up a little bit more. I think, nothing confirmed yet, but there's some pretty strong intel from people I know that he is training with the back line. So that will be a really interesting pick to maybe replace a Ben McKay. It would take years for him to sort of get to a high level, but I think he's got the body shape, the athleticism and the size to do it. And if it takes a bit of the load off his body, I think that'd be good. So, the back line will be very interesting. I think we're going to ship a lot of points, but hopefully we could just go all out attacking footy, which will be fun, but I don't know how many wins that will that'll come to. All right. So, all that being said, let's look towards the future a little bit. What do you think North Melbourne could do in the next 5 years?
It's going to be really interesting. Just looking from a 2024 perspective, I've thought this quite a fair bit since the end of the season that there are a lot of clubs on the way up and not a lot on the way down. Clubs do fantastic jobs now to kind of rejuvenate their list and not, kind of plummet. You guys are going to be in a contention over the next few years with West Coast and who kind of makes that leap first. And you guys should be a season or two ahead, I'd like to think, just from a rebuilding standpoint and a list demographic standpoint. So, one you should have beat. I think you should be leapfrogging Richmond and Geelong quickly enough.
Geelong, really?
Yeah, I think as a Cats fan as well, I think it's probably time the Cats.
You won't drop as low as us though. You've still got such a solid base of players.
No, it's good. It's good. It's just how reliant we're going to be on some of those players still. Our midfield group is quite poor, I feel. Are we going to get a lot out of Tanner Brule and Max Holmes next year? It's the guys that kind of need to take the next step up. Jai Clark's the one we picked up last year at pick 10. I don't want to put a lot on his shoulders, but at the same time, who is this next wave of players that we usually have coming through?
Someone somewhere. You always do. You'll flog someone out of the Geelong Cats or the Geelong Falcons, and then they'll just become a star, mate. I wouldn't be too concerned.
Before turning this into a Cats podcast, Stephen, I think three of the six blokes we picked up in the national draft were mature age prospects. So you have faith in this team, of course, like given just what we've been able to do. But I just feel like Geelong is one that probably won't be taking that huge step back in like they might have done at the 2016 season after missing finals. I just don't think that's what we're going to be doing. So
North finish above Geelong. Lock it in, guys.
Not finishing above, but I think leapfrogging Geelong and Richmond in the coming years.
A few years,
The Tigers are another one that, what we saw this year, a bit of change off field. Adam Uzay could certainly be what they need to kind of, kick themselves back into the top eight. But they're probably the two clubs when you talk about clubs on the way down. Frio could easily jump back up.
I was going to say Frio too, yeah. Okay.
I don't know if they do, but
I reckon it's one or two. I could see them bottom four easy, but that finals run a couple of seasons ago now, I mean, you really don't know. So I know what you mean. Like the Gold Coast are another one. Like, yeah, on paper it looks fantastic, but it never has clicked at the Gold Coast. So does it finally work? I don't know. I would personally like to see it maybe not work, but
there's that feel with the Suns that this is a bit different. You've got Dimmer and now they've got these suite of academy kids coming through that done pretty well to retain the players they need to. Ben King's probably the obvious one over the next 12 months. But it's just like I'm saying, for the Roos, the climb isn't going to be as easy, I think, as what we might have seen a few of these other clubs that have rebuilt over the years.
I agree with that.
The list itself, probably one of, if you're a coach and you wanted to pick one of the lists right now, it's probably one of the top three that you probably want to look at as far as if I'm going to sign a 5-year contract, slowly build my way up. It's probably one of the best, out of those top bottom 10 sides, I should say. It's one of probably the most promising, a flurry of young prospects, top selections, even guys like you said that, like a Nick Larkey, who you've just gotten the most out of, a bloke who went pick 73 or whatever it was. So finals probably isn't the conversation next year. I think most North fans might agree with that. Year after, it's so hard to get a read on. But
absolutely,
like to be thinking that you're in the top eight conversation. You might not be making finals in 2025, but at least you want to be in the conversation. Showing September, Clarko he's not going to be too happy if the club's not taking that step either. So. From a list analysis perspective, you think you've got another year, ideally not bottom two. I think that's kind of just where you don't want to be, is the bottom two. West Coast be below you, and you probably want to be jumping one or two clubs at least the next few seasons. It's just hard to figure out who those two clubs are. Like Essendon should be going up. Adelaide should be playing finals next year. Fremantle should be going up, but they're, like you said, they're a hard one to read.
Yeah.
Gold Coast. They're the two that kind of sat above you. Hawthorn as well. Like, you want to be kind of hanging with the Hawks. You probably want to be jumping them. Like, that'd be a fantastic result. If they stay on the trajectory they are, they shouldn't be far off finals, and they could make a pretty decent leap next year. I think you guys kind of want to be hanging there and making that leap with them soon too.
Yeah.
So it's just hard to figure out who the clubs that are going down are.
Yeah.
And that's what obviously a lot of the system is reliant on, is how much these clubs kind of move. But for the Roos, it should only be up, and it's just a matter of how quickly it's going to be a clubs next year, and ideally, top 10 in the league in 2 years' time, you'd want to be.
I think for me next year, and this is my next question as well, is a prediction where you think we might finish next year, and I'll give you mine quickly. I've got two spicy takes for next year, and I don't completely believe them. But I think if someone wanted a couple of hot takes from me, I think North finish above Hawthorn, and I think Carlton missed the eight. They're my two incredibly hot takes. I don't fully believe them, but I think there is a world where they happen. We won't dive into the Carlton thing now. That may be for another podcast, because I want to anger all that tribe. But for me next season, I'd say the 6-win mark, give or take maybe one, depending on performance, but I'd say six wins or so. And sort of have a very similar season than the Hawks had the season just gone. I think we're still bottom four next year, but I can fully see us doubling our wins and maybe being the best in the bottom four or something like that. That's maybe what I would hope for. But as a base expectation, around six wins, be competitive. I still think bottom four, but what do you think we might be able to achieve?
Yeah, I think the Hawks one's potential. Like, and this first thing that comes to mind a little bit is the fixture. Obviously, you guys, you know, you needed a decent fixture. I think you got a decent fixture. The Hawks actually probably got the flip side, despite finishing third last. They don't have the easiest draw. So that is an area you guys can take advantage on from a ladder and comparisons perspective, is making that jump over the Hawks. It's certainly not implausible. And like you said, yeah, you probably want to have a similar year to them. They knocked off some pretty big scalps this year. I think that's all what North Melbourne fans want to see. Like, yeah, that win against Freo in round two might have felt like that. But then probably looking in hindsight, thinking, oh, we knocked off Freo, that's great. But we want to be, you know, like Hawks did in round 21 against Collingwood, those kind of wins where it's like, you know, where you guys are seeing what you want to see, but, you know, just going a performance that you probably aren't imagining possible and knocking off a premiership contender, not out of the question, certainly next year for you guys, I think. So 6 wins would be great. I think, how many did you have this year? Was it
three?
Because you had that drought breaking one at the end of the year, that's right. Double that would be great. You know, and there's some of the off-field stuff, player retention. You know, you want to keep Taron Thomas. Cam Zerha's another one that's off contract. I'm not sure who else on your list.
I think they're the major two. There's some other ones. There's some other younger guys, but nothing that is too pressing, I really think. Do you think we can get out of the bottom four? Do you think that's a realistic expectation, or do you think that's maybe going to be the year after?
It's certainly not unrealistic. Like I said, you keep West Coast below you. I think you guys, I'm assuming you guys have them twice.
I think we do. I think we got them twice, Hawks twice.
Didn't get to knock them off over in WA, but you know, you want to be trying to pencil in both of those as wins. If you're looking at where your 6 wins are coming from, it's probably a good chance a third of them are against West Coast.
Yes.
Knock off Hawks at least once. You know, like you said, if you're a good chance of going past them, then it probably comes down to getting at least a win over them.
We owned WA last year as well. Clarko went over there and we got Freo. I guess we did West Coast in Melbourne, but Alistair Clarkson was the mayor of Western Australia after round two.
The first two rounds, as we're saying, there was a lot of that confidence. We won't talk about the following 20. But
don't bring that up.
Yeah. But 6 wins isn't out of the question. By all means, whether that gets you a spot out of, as 17th, hard to see. Like the Hawks probably picked up 7 wins, I think, this year. And
I think so.
Finished 16th. So, like I said, if there's going to be the clubs that you're going to be trying to pull down with you and go above, it might be Richmond. It might be Geelong. It could still be Gold Coast. It could still be Fremantle. And it definitely could still be Hawthorn. I think Hawthorn and Freo are going to be two interesting ones. I think both can play finals next year. But at the same time, I won't be surprised if they're similar positions, just given the strength of clubs that are also trying to get into the top eight. And out of the top eight this year, I think really St Kilda's the only one I see falling out. Like Carlton, I probably have in the same as you. Not to say that it would be un-Carlton-like.
I think they could finish top four absolutely as well. Don't get me wrong. I just could see a world where they sort of. I think the Geelong take you've got is wild though. Just to give you a little bit of confidence, I think that's. I don't think the Hawks are any chance of finals, and I don't think Geelong are going to drop that much at all.
This is the only thing is, I think for me, like I said, I'm a glass half full guy. But when it comes to Geelong, my confidence has never been high. Like, and I don't want to say this on a North Melbourne podcast because like the last 15, 16 years we've had, I've never taken it back. I don't know. I've always kind of been a glass half empty when it comes to Geelong. And I guess what I just saw this year, you know, still good, still contending for a good part of the season. But then I think our week has just opened up. We had some injury issues, but every club did, I think, at some point this year, to be honest. So you can blame it on injuries, but you've got to kind of make it all relative.
That's true.
I don't see it. I'm not tipping us to be bottom four or,
no.
You know, we've finished sixth or seventh last this year. Like it's not far off, but there is that gap this year between you guys on West Coast and Hawthorn, and then Hawthorn and maybe the rest. And then, you know, that rest is real.
I get what you mean.
As we saw, like the finals race, we had 13 clubs in it with a couple.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, one thing goes this way and that way, and it's completely different. So, 6 wins is a good goal. I think, like I said, if you've got two games against the Eagles and two against the Hawks. That could be half of your wins right there.
Yeah.
You'd like to think, and this is the direction that the club wants to go in, that kind of has to be it, I would have thought.
Yeah, for sure. All right, last question really quickly before we do go. Should we have traded for pick one?
I wasn't pro North getting pick one. I think West Coast should have traded pick one. I didn't think that you guys might have been the fit. Like Harley Reid is going to make any team that bit better, but I think what you guys would have had to have given up and West Coast asking to pick two and three. Like you go back, I went through, I think, every draft since 2010, and maybe once taking pick one over picks two and three was better. Like just looking, and it's all hindsight, and you're kind of looking at the names.
There's only one number one pick every year as well compared to every other player. I think it's a bit of a diluted pool for number one pick, but I do know what you mean, yeah.
No, yeah. Like Kyler Reid is probably in a conversation as a number one pick that not many draftees we've seen recently have been in. But like I said, I think it was one draft, might have been Lockie Whitfield's draft when he was taken ahead of two GWS players that probably didn't last that long on their list. But other than that, some were kind of even. Like you had, I think, Wietering, and would you take Wietering or would you take Callum Mills and Josh Sackey? It's probably maybe leaning towards Wietering, but it's maybe not as obvious. So do you take Sam Walsh or do you take Lukosius and Rankin? I think that's probably one where you might lean towards the two Suns boys, even though, you know, Rankin's left. I think what you could certainly get out of this year is a pro argument that what you get in McKercher and Dersmar is going to be equal to the value of Harley or maybe probably greater. You know, if they all reach, the potential that you want them all to see, you're probably going to be quite happy with what you get, I think, in hindsight. The one thing that I thought was a big talking point in North Melbourne's draft haul was not getting Curtin.
Yes, absolutely.
We spoke earlier about list needs and drafting that high. It's not always a list needs thing. It's getting the best talent available.
Best talent,
I think that might have been what you did. I have Curtin rated quite highly. And it's not just you guys that are going to be, talked about in overlooking him. Mm. It's Melbourne. It's GWS trading out. I think Hawthorn probably should have taken him as well.
Yes.
The Dogs were probably the first and the only club in the top seven outside of maybe West Coast who had pick one that should have overlooked him. Like the Dogs probably don't need a key defender. West Coast tried to get him again in trading in. And I thought maybe that's what you guys could have done with some of those leftover picks.
For sure.
Five draftees is a good haul, but if there was a way that you could get into the draft order and trade for GWS's pick instead of Adelaide, and while keeping maybe your future first round, you could have got Dan Curtin that way, and that's on top of McKercher and Dersma. So obviously, you're cutting away a Will Dawson and maybe a Taylor Goad. You're getting maybe Riley Hardiman in still, but if maybe you're probably packaging 15, 17 and 18, which ends up being a bit later.
That's a lot of picks too, and a lot of first round sort of talent to trade up for one guy as well. But I do know what you mean, like that Dan Curtin sort of feels that biggest hole for us. But do we see a Toby Pink come in and be like a Tom Stewart, or does he come in and do nothing? Like I really have no idea.
Yeah, I think it probably comes down to how high, Rawlings might have had Will Dawson on his order. Like if he's got Curtin up high, but he's thinking, look, Will Dawson, we can probably get with one of our picks anyway. Like if they were really satisfied with that kind of pickup, then maybe it wasn't much of an issue for them and they didn't have to blink when it came to Dan Curtin sliding a little bit. They could just say, look, we'll get Dawson a bit later and, not have to give up probably three first round picks or, three late first round picks, but they're still first round picks. A lot of the context on this year's draft is also, when you're picking after maybe pick 13, 14, you're probably not getting what you're getting in those first dozen selections, but you're backing your system, you're backing your draft order, and I think that's exactly what North Melbourne did, and you guys still have your future first round pick, not that that was really up for grabs. I think it's going to be a pretty important one. But then again, you could have mentioned that as maybe a piece when you look at the midfield heavy draft next year. Would maybe just that pick alone might have been enough to get Dan Curtin. But there's probably a reason why North Melbourne weren't in those trade discussions compared to the three other clubs that were, and they're just backing in the plan they had from the start.
Yep.
It sounds like they were settled on two and three weeks out from the draft. West Coast were locked on pick one weeks out from the draft. So, yeah, I don't think it's going to be a big miss, as it Harley can be or and could be the best player in this draft by some distance. But even then, picks 2 and 3 together, if they can reach their potential, North fans in a way can win that. So
yeah,
like I said, I don't think Harley was the fit for you guys. I think kind of getting a couple of top end players. And a player who, you know, can be quite midfield heavy, like can play across all three lines. But when you've kind of got a good focus on midfield already, I thought maybe getting a Dersmer for your forward line and a Curtin for your back line would have worked really well. But you also want to be getting the best available, and that was Colby. So it's an interesting mix. It's going to be a really interesting class to see who kind of pops up as the top of that group after the whole year that Harley Reid had. So it's obviously a bit of a wait and see, but I think it was a good move overall to not kind of give up 3 to 4 first round picks, including 1 of 2 and 3.
Yeah,
pick one. In the end.
Yeah,
yeah.
We got to back Brady in now. We've got a role with it regardless of what happens. So, aboard the North train, guys, to Premiership City. We'll see. Who knows? Well, look. Thank you for coming on. I appreciate you giving up the time and come and have a chat about a club where you don't follow. So I do appreciate that.
Pleasure.
So everyone who hasn't checked out Zero Hanger with an E, not an A at the end, remember, go and check them out. They do great stuff. And who knows, maybe in a few years' time, you'll be back on here just before grand final week and we'll be talking about the ultimate North Melbourne rebuild. I'm ready for the Amazon doco right now. So that's exciting stuff.
Fingers crossed. No, that'll be good. I'm looking forward to that.
Unreal, man. Thank you again. And we might hear from you again sometime soon.
Thanks, Josh. All the best for next season, mate.
Thank you to Mitch once again for jumping on the podcast. Thank you for giving up your time, mate. Appreciate it. Good chat. Hopefully we get you on again in the future. So look, let's jump over to the AFLW now. I won't lie to you guys. I've watched some AFLW games on TV and I've always enjoyed it, but I've never been to one before. And yesterday's was actually my first time ever going to the AFLW. I was lucky enough to go along with Admin 3 from Close to a Flag. Marnie, of course, joined. And a guy called Anthony who runs a brewery, a little independent brewery down in Kensington called Bonehead Brewing. If you don't know Bonehead Brewing and you're around the area, please get down there. He's a great guy. And a very cute dog called Quincy, to be honest, who I'm probably going to go back there just so we can hang out again. Very, very sweet. But hey, had a good crew along to the AFLW prelim final against the Adelaide Crows, who have always had the number over North. We had a pretty bad record against them, apparently, and they're one of the strongest teams in the comp. So I didn't know really what to expect. Like I said, I don't exactly know how everything goes in the AFLW until yesterday. But North really came out of the blocks pretty quick. We were definitely the better team in the first quarter. And probably at halftime still, the Crows sort of came out in the second half and looked a lot cleaner than us. Their ball movement was cleaner. There was always a spare around the midfield. They always had an overlapping handball, kind of like the men's team, to be honest. The Crows just looked like they had more people, you know, around the ball at all times. So didn't know what to expect sort of from this second half. The Crows sort of came back and North held on. We had a few shots at goal and missed, but got the old handy point, and that proved to be the winning point in the end, which was very, very exciting. And like I said, it's sort of the first game I've went to, and it's sort of the first time really diving into the AFLW. Not from not wanting to or anything like that. I guess I'm just busy and sort of always kept an eye on it, but never really dove in. But I had a great time at the game. The crowd was loud. They were into it. And I'm definitely going to go back to the grand final next week. So before we keep talking about it, get your grand final tickets to this game. I think it's 2:30 next Sunday at Icon Park. Get to the game, guys. It was so much fun. I found myself in the last quarter getting incredibly angry and incredibly passionate. Clapping, standing up, yelling, you know, just like the men's game, which was great. So I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to going to more of these in the future. Going into next week, would I love to give you guys a preview of the game? I would, but I have no idea about the Brisbane Lions. I think they have won a few premierships. I think Brisbane and Adelaide are usually the two best in the AFLW. But hey, Adelaide, I think were meant to be rated higher than us or have been more successful in the past, and we beat them. Both prelims were pretty close as well. So even though it might not be quite the standard of the men, is it close footy and you really get into it and you get up and about and excited because it's close? Absolutely. So get your tickets. They're not that expensive. Get down to the game and let's get a huge crowd there to support North. The only Melbourne team in it, they've got to do it for Victoria, guys. They've got to do it for Victoria. Emma Carney, hopefully I'm saying that right, Emma Carney at quarter time pretended to throw the ball into some Adelaide chick's face. And that was hilarious. That instantly made me go, I'm in here. I'm angry as well. I love her aggression. She's definitely the most Zerha-like player on our team. She was fantastic. How did Admin 3 say? Jasmine Garner? I don't know why he put the Scouse accent on, but hey, it suits. And that's the way I say it in my head from now on. She was great. I don't know the name of the girl at full forward, but she could take a clunk. Not always the best shot at goal I've ever seen, but she was crucial down the stretch, taking a couple of pretty crucial grabs. And I think she kicked that handy point as well, which was fantastic. The one thing I did notice being my first time at the game was our defense is really, really solid. Our defense won us that game. The Crows consistently, especially in the third, were pounding the door down trying to get into that 50, and they continuously did, but we kept chopping the ball off and staying resolute. It was just sort of getting the ball past halfway coming out of our defense, which by the end of it was good enough, and we won the game. So, look, very, very exciting. I don't have too much more of a breakdown for you guys because I am sort of new to this, so give me my time to get more into it and learn the players' names, and maybe we can do a little bit more AFLW chat. But please, get down to the game. It really, really was fun. I didn't think I'd have that much fun of the game, and I did, and I'm looking forward to going back and hanging out with the same group as last week. So if you are going to get down there, I might post where I am, and if anyone is down there and wants to come hang out with myself or Marnie, Admin 3, please do, because we want all the support. We can make a little Bay 29 at the game. I'll keep you guys updated with all of that sort of stuff. But, yeah, great time at the AFLW. Go, Roo Girls. Next week, grand final. Get the tickets. And let's get down to the game and have a great time. So that's basically it, guys. I don't know how long this one has gone for, to be honest, after I dropped the interview in. But thank you to Mitch once again. Check out Zero Hanger for all of your AFL journalistic needs, a very unbiased opinion. They're not controlled by Rupert Murdoch or any of that sort of craziness. Get on those guys. So excited for next week in the grand final, the AFLW. Expect some highlights. We're bringing home the cup. I'm already calling it right now. We're bringing home the cup, and I'll be there loud and proud with my bounding roo on. All right, guys, I'm going to go and edit this and get it out for everybody. Thank you for tuning in once again. Please follow all the socials. Subscribe on YouTube, by the way. I need to say this a little bit more. YouTube is doing really, really well for me. I am planning for next season to start filming these and get a little bit higher production value. So get on board with that. Thank you to everyone who has left a review, liked anything I've done. Thank you to all the social media sort of engagement as well. I ask you guys questions and you always send so many and it's great. I'm slow on the DMs, I know, but I'll always get back to people eventually. And yeah, I just really appreciate everyone listening to me talk about the North Melbourne Football Club because I never thought people would really like it that much. But hey, here we are. I'm here for you guys. Continuously putting out content. This is great. I love talking about North at this time of year and I never would have thought that. But hey, big podcast next week after the AFL Grand Final, AFLW Grand Final, sorry. And yeah, I'll see you guys then. I'm going to stop babbling on now. Thank you very much. See you later.